This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
You see that really manifest with gentle parenting, too, is kind of like the trend now. Oh, I want to make sure like as many interactions as possible that I have with my child are conducted in this thoughtful, emotionally regulated way. I do think it's true that most millennials are not giving their relationship with their partner the same amount of like bandwidth in their brain, thinking through like, well, what do I want that to look like? What am I doing to nurture that relationship?
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is Postpartum Maternity Care Gaps with Baby Center's Robin Hillmantle. Robin is the Senior Director of Editorial Strategy and Growth at Baby Center. She has more than a decade of experience reporting on and editing stories about parenting, baby products, health news, and lifestyle trends. Before joining the Baby Center team, Rachel was the digital director at Women's Health, and she also worked as senior editor, news editor, and writer with more than 14 years of experience in health and lifestyle journalism. Her work has appeared in Time, USA Today, Self, Cosmopolitan, Food Network Magazine, New York, and Parade, among many other publications. She lives in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where she enjoys spending time in her non-working hours with her husband, three sons, and tripod dog, Kiwi. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with your journey into this career. I'm wondering when it started and when it became a calling.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I live in Chapel Hill now. I actually also went to UNC Chapel Hill. That's where I met my husband.
Tar Heels.
Yes, go Heels. When I started undergraduate school, I wanted to be a journalism major, and I thought that was my backup plan, that I was going to go to law school and become an attorney. And the backup plan became the primary plan because I just loved this idea of having questions and then having the toolkit that you needed to find the answers, no matter what those questions were. And I was on student publications. I did internships throughout my college years, and knew that I was really drawn to magazines in particular because they have this unique method of storytelling where you get to blend human interest stories and data and really like legitimate expert resources as well and incorporate visual storytelling. I just loved it. And so after I graduated, I moved to New York, started my career at Cosmopolitan Magazine.
Not a bad place to start.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. It was 2009, so there were not a lot of other people in my cohort moving from Chapel Hill to New York at the time. But it was a really, really fortunate experience that I landed at Cosmo. And I just found in those early years, I was drawn to stories that had either a like a physical health or mental health component of them. You know, Cosmo's has a reputation, but I think what like people might not immediately think of is it has a history of also having a lot of like investigation into the relationships we have as human beings and what that looks like to relate to each other. And so like that was really interesting to me. I talked to a lot of psychologists and you know, relationship counselors in the process of reporting stories. And just every step I took in my career found myself drawn to these physical and mental health stories. So fast forward to today, I have been at Baby Center for about 3 years now. And what I love about it is not only do I get to continue telling the stories of parents, of, you know, experts in this field who have things to say or topics that they feel are being overlooked. But also Baby Center is a unique publication because we have a really robust research leg and we have a team who has a lot of experience in doing these kind of quantitative studies. So we get to see what the parents who are downloading our app and just talking about organically in the community forums, which are super active, by the way. It's like something like more than 700,000 comments every single day are getting posted there. We can take these like anecdotal trends that we see and then talk to the research team and say like, hey, we'd love to actually like dive into this from a quantitative standpoint too and see, put some numbers to this. And so that's exactly what we did with this postpartum gaps topic.
Yes, which we are going to dive into shortly. I want to say that spending some time on your website, it is so comprehensive. Like, so for everyone listening, you know, if you are expecting, if you have young kids, I mean, there is something for everyone from, I mean, there's so much health information, there's so much developmental information, everything is separated by where you are either in your pregnancy or even if you're trying to get pregnant. I mean, it starts very early and it takes you all the way through with so many useful metrics and programs within the, you know, how to track everything. And so I was very impressed with it. I could tell how much or imagine how much time and energy goes into it. And for you guys to be such a hub for so many women and young families for for health. And as I was thinking, as I was reading the intro, talking about people being healthy and happy and being their best selves. And this goes right to the core of this issue is how new mothers start life and the often lack of support to start life in what we would call maybe an optimal in our country in a way that's optimal and healthy and supportive. And so I'm going to dive into some of the research that you reference and what Baby Center has come up with. And this was studying over about 1700 or so mothers that 41% of mothers feel they have enough support during the postpartum period. But the support they is mostly centered around caring for their newborn. So that's less than half. That's a very, that's not a high percentage. And then while 65% of moms say they leave the hospital feeling prepared to care for their newborns, only 47 say they feel prepared to care for themselves, right? So it's like, what moms, like, let's start early with just sacrifice yourself. Let's not talk about you. It's not about you, right? It's all about the child. And what we know is now is that the health of parents and primarily mom is so critical to the health of a child. And this isn't for pressure or mom blaming. It's for like, where are we supporting the unit, right?
Yep.
Moms of color are disproportionately more likely to say they lack postpartum support. This is not new information, unfortunately. 22% of Asian American Pacific Islander mothers and 32% of Black mothers feel they receive all the support they need compared to 44% of white mothers. So 44% is low, and then it's even lower when we're talking about people of color. And then finally, I know this is a lot, people, moms who take maternity leave for 13 weeks or longer are 29% less likely to experience any anxiety symptoms. And that is really an important stat, because a lot of parents experience postpartum anxiety, mothers, postpartum anxiety, and everyone always talks about the postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And finally, I thought this is powerful. Moms whose partners took no parental leave are 89% more likely to experience severe anxiety symptoms, showing how important that support is. 89%, that is so high. So I know I just gave everyone a lot of information, and I know, Robin, you can handle it because you've been studying and working with this. So what does all this mean for you and Baby Center?
Yeah, I mean, I think every mom, and this is truly unfortunate, but I guess there's power at least in knowing this is such a universal experience. But every mom I've talked to, and we see it in our community all the time, has a story about feeling their own lack of support in the postpartum experience, the postpartum period. Mm-hmm. So when we wrote a story about these findings, we open up with a mom who was feeling some postpartum anxiety and reached out to her provider. And then it was over, you know, an internet portal, as so many providers have these days. And she was expecting to have a thoughtful conversation about this, leave with some like resources so she could feel like she had some actionable takeaway that could help her feel like I have something I can do about this anxiety. And instead, what happened is her provider just kind of like jotted back a note that was like, okay, try this office. And then when this woman looked into the office, the fee was like $750 out of pocket. You know, there was no insurance accepted. She walked away with this feeling that just like this provider didn't really care that much about her well-being. They just kind of wanted to check off the box of like, I referred you somewhere else. Like, this isn't on me. Mm-hmm. And I think what we see is, like I said, every mom has some story, whether it's about in the healthcare system, the lack of support they received postpartum, like socially, this idea of whenever anyone comes by, they're like, how's the baby? I want to hold the baby. Like, all of the attention is on the baby, and it's really rare to have a genuine moment with someone who's like, hey, how are you doing as the mom? Mm-hmm. Like, what can I do for you? Mm-hmm. So obviously that's very disheartening, but it was something that we saw coming up so often anecdotally in the women we talked to in our Baby Center community. So it was important to us to do this research, because sometimes data can be power in a way that, you know, when you just have this whisper network of like something's kind of a known entity, it doesn't have the same impact or the same call for change as it does when you can put a number to it.
Right. Right. And just the question, how are you doing? Gosh, I mean, it's such a simple question, and our system has not been set up apparently to ask that question. It's also written in the article that it's common for newborns to have at least three visits with the pediatrician in the first 4 weeks, right? We've all experienced that. But then in contrast, moms have basically one usually checkup with their OB at 6 weeks postpartum. Like that's kind of it. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, and then I do want to talk about, you know, our peer country. There's a lot of other countries around the world who do it differently, and we can learn from them. I'm wondering if you don't mind me asking, you've done this three times yourself.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing about your, like, did you experience any of what you are now talking about and working with?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share. I mean, I think, so my oldest son is 5 years old, and I just have very distinct memories of delivering him. And I mean, becoming a parent is a shock to the system in so many ways. To a certain extent, there's nothing that can prepare you for that. Mm-hmm. But there was really just like not a lot of structural support after he was born that made me feel like I was entering this new stage of my life in a like confident, you know, empowered way. It was like I immediately felt like an imposter. It was like, what am I doing? And in the moment, it was manifesting for me as like, this is a little bit different than, you know, what the results of our survey found. For me, it was manifesting as like, I don't know how to take care of this baby. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. But I think also like now that I've had time to reflect on it, and that was a few years ago, it was also like I never got a postpartum anxiety diagnosis, but I felt a lot of anxiety and a lot of like disconnect from my everyday life in the way that, again, with like time and space, I'm able to sort of see the connection to like, oh, this is how you describe like signs of depression to people, you know? So it, but it wasn't like no one was even asking me the questions of like that would have helped me identify that in any kind of clear way. It just felt very like survival mode. And my son also had to go to the NICU. It was like a little bit of a traumatic birth. So I felt like that also exacerbated a little bit this like, my instinct was to be like, oh my gosh, baby's in trouble. Like all emphasis is on like him and like, how do we get him healthy? And he was in the NICU for a few days. He's very healthy now. It was, you know, in retrospect, not that scary in the, all the grand scheme of things that could have happened. But it did like, it's interesting to look back and see there's immediately this mindset of like, well, if I want to be a good parent, like, yeah, like I'm pouring all this energy now into this little human, and there's not a lot of support or guidance that shows you how to do that in a way that also is cognizant of your own needs as a mom.
And just the basic education, or what we call psychoeducation, of this is normal after having a baby. Like, here's the normal body sensations, feelings, pain. Here is symptoms of depression or anxiety. Here's what we typically see that are very common. Here's what we also see that are common and would warrant, let us know, reach out. We, you know, whether it's anxiety, depression, there are things you can do. And it's from other conversations I've had over the years on the podcast in related topics, I've also been made very aware of how early mothers are felt to question themselves and feel like things are their fault. Like right at the beginning, if you have a child who's not latching on when you're trying to breastfeed, it must be something wrong with you, right? Like, what kind of mother am I? And so it just seems, I know we're talking now about somewhat about narratives, but it seems to me, it's the system as it is that perpetuates and contributes to all of these things when there are other things, other information, like with Baby Center, people know this going in, they could be more prepared if they have that extra support as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly our hope. And one of our big goals is to empower people with information. And I think, you know, the other big thing is that Baby Center aims to do that I think is so, so powerful. And I experienced this firsthand, is to connect parents to each other. And anytime someone signs up for Baby Center online or downloads the Baby Center app, if they're pregnant, they put in their due date. If they have a child, they can put in their baby's birthday if they'd like. And you're automatically entered into what we call a birth month club, which means you know, if you have a baby due February 2024, you're connected to all the other parents who also have a baby due at that same time. And it's incredible to see the engagement among these parents who, if they have nothing else in common, that is something that binds them together. And I will say, you know, I have a friend who, when my son was born, my oldest son, she was like, I would have described her as like, oh, she's married to one of my husband's closest friends. You know, we kind of knew each other, but we didn't have our own relationship really. And her daughter was born 6 days before my son. And even though we didn't live in the same place, we hadn't known each other very well prior to that point, we started texting. And it just, to have someone going through the same things as you and validating you, like, that was what really helped me enter motherhood the way that, like, I wish I had been able to from the start, was, you know, in seeing how hard she was trying and what a struggle it was. And I mean, I think at everyone's core, it's, you're asking yourself, like, am I a good parent?
Right.
And seeing her struggle in similar ways to me, but then being able to recognize, like, of course she's a good parent. I can, like, look in on this other person and see that, allowed me to, like, reflect that on myself as well. And I think there were times, you know, she's super supportive. We're friends to this day, where she said to me, like, oh, Robin, you're such a great mom. And so you're right. Like, ideally we would have the structural support, but in the absence of structural support, there are some ways that I don't think it fully fills in the gaps, but some things we can kind of do for ourselves to, like, build up some scaffolding of support.
Absolutely. And that's where I feel we are as empowered as people and organizations outside of the major governmental, political, healthcare, the structures that are really seem to be fixed and big albatrosses and hard to move and lots of polarities. There's these rooms for people and socially minded people and companies to come to the cause to fill in the gaps. And they're critical. They're literally life-saving in many cases. So, yeah, this is exactly what Baby Center is doing for soon to be, early moms, soon to be moms, postpartum moms. And I want to move back over again just a little bit more about structure, because we have lots of listeners and we have, you know, people with influence, and just so the more information we get out there of how we still want to make these changes in our society. And of course, we look across the pond to Europe, does a lot of things in this regard. Well, as far as we can tell, many countries in Europe have comprehensive home visiting programs where trained nurses come several times in the first weeks after birth. Finland, of course, Finland always gets a lot of press with social programs. All new parents for almost 100 years have been given baby boxes, which is a gift from the government, which includes clothes, diapers, and bathing supplies. And the box that it comes in has a mattress and doubles as a bassinet. Over 100 years. I mean, that's amazing. And then in Germany, new moms receive regular home visits with a nurse midwife and guidance on core and pelvic floor classes to help them recover, mental health therapy appointments, and other resources. That just feels so, I mean, it feels like it's what everyone should have, and yet it feels so progressive.
Well, and you haven't even explicitly addressed the paid leave, which is
go for that. Yeah, go for that. So you want to say a little bit about that, the differences in the paid leave?
I mean, you talked about it a little earlier in the episode, but one of our findings from the study was that one of the biggest factors that really impacted positive outcomes for moms is taking the maternity leave that they need. People who took at least 13 weeks had much, much better outcomes in terms of they were 29% less likely to experience any form of anxiety symptoms. And then moms whose partners took no leave, which is very, very common here, were 89% more likely to experience severe anxiety symptoms. Take other countries where it varies by country, but it's very common in Europe for a family to have a year of paid leave, to be able to take longer than that if they'd if they're open to having a portion be unpaid. And it's a lot more flexible in terms of how that can be split among the parents too. So, and culturally, it's much more common and commonly accepted for a father to take an extended period of leave. I think back to my experiences. So my husband, he actually did become an attorney, even though that was my original goal. And when our oldest son was born, he worked for a big law firm that had a very generous parental leave program for, I think they called it primary caregivers. So it wasn't labeled as like the birthing parent. It was primary caregivers. And in reality, how that had always been interpreted before him was the mom, right?
Oh, he lawyered. He lawyered the lawyer company, didn't he? Nice.
Yeah. You can see where this is going. Yeah. He said, well, my wife works. Like, what? Why would we call her the primary caregiver? Like, I'm just as much the primary caregiver as she is. And he said, I want to take the full, I think it was 5 months of
leave.
Wow. Yeah. Honestly, it was more leave than I got at my company at the time. And he did. And to his boss's credit, even though it was unprecedented, they were supportive. He wasn't sure what the response would be like. And we are like very, very privileged that he worked somewhere where this was an option. And I think my mental health would have been very different. It was already just like, I always tell people, becoming a parent is wonderful and it's very, very difficult. And I think my experience would have been totally different and a lot bleaker, frankly, had I not had, I think my husband took a month off in the beginning so that we could have that time together. And then I used the remainder of my leave, was very fortunate to get, I think it was right at 13 weeks, actually. So I hit that threshold
our
survey said is so key. And then my husband used the rest of his leave.
Oh, so cool. That is really cool for everyone listening to be creative when you look at the, what the rules are about leave. And of course now more and more, depending on where you live and depending on the company, there's more and more, leave for, there's paternal leave. There's more inclusive language around leave. When I reflect on ours, I think our kids are older, but I think we've had kids similar. We had three kids in about four years or so, that sort of
very
gap.
Similar.
And we did not hit the marker. We were both new in our early careers, both working for nonprofits. My wife took 6 weeks off. I took 1 week off, maybe.
Oh, gosh. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And then I guess the fortune with our first one is that the nonprofit she worked for was a mom-child nonprofit. So she was able to bring our daughter to work with her. So it was very supportive. Like, I mean, so if she had to go to work, that at least had that. And then with our other two, when she went back to hospital nursing, it still was like, it was like 6 weeks. Like we just weren't in a financial, like there was not the benefit for in either of our organizations, and we just couldn't afford to take that much time off where we lived. We just couldn't do it. And I know that's the case for lots of people.
Yeah, that's the reality for so many Americans. There is no federally guaranteed paid leave. Some states have passed laws for paid leave, which is great. That's a change I really, really hope to see in the next couple of years. Not to get too political, but it just seems like a no-brainer, especially when you look at what other countries in Europe are doing and how much of an impact it makes for parents' mental health. And the one thing I will say is this is another area where it does pay to be your own advocate and just like ask. Like I shared the example about my husband. Something else that kind of interesting that happened to me with my first son is I was working for a different company at the time, and I lived in New York, which was in the process of making its laws more progressive around paid leave. And I guess what had happened was HR just like had not fully briefed themselves on the ins and outs of the new laws, what were relatively new laws at the time. And they told me, you know, you get, I forget the exact numbers, but let's say it's like 11 weeks of paid leave. And I was like looking at the website on the New York government, you know, paid leave. And I was like, I don't know. I really think it's more than that. And I pushed back, and it was intimidating because, you know, you worry about like consequences at your job. And at first they said like, no, sorry, you're like misinterpreting it. And then I emailed a like help, you know, email contact at the New York paid leave website. And actually a lawyer responded and said, like, you're interpreting it correctly. Mm. And he was not my lawyer. I did not pay him anything, but I forwarded this to HR. And, you know, I think we all have this idea of like, oh, scary letter from a lawyer, like incites action. And that's exactly what happened here. They were like, oh, sorry, our mistake. We'll fix this for you.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, I was very fortunate to live in a state with good laws around this. I'm in North Carolina now. The laws here are not as generous to parents. So I say this like knowing full well, not everyone will be able to manifest what I was very, very fortunate to take advantage of. But even if there aren't laws that are favorable, you can always ask your employer, you know, all right, you know, I really feel like I need more time. Is it possible to take like another couple of weeks for partial pay? Could I apply like these days to it that wouldn't necessarily, you know, like the normal policy is not to be able to use this kind of like leave for this. Sometimes there is flexibility and sometimes there's not, and that's really unfortunate, but it never hurts to ask.
It seems like critical to ask and to look into it. As you're talking, I was thinking, you know, the little attorney in you came out, and I like the skill set for, I think there is some overlap, would you say, between the skill set of being a journalist and the skill set of being an attorney? Like, I think they definitely go together. And good for you. He lets your husband do the law school thing so you can just benefit from the expertise and use your own journalistic skills to move the needle in question.
Yeah. My husband would say I was the one who made the right choice there.
I've heard that before. Okay. So, knowing from the research that more than half, very likely, because, you know, this is a generalizable sample size, more than half of U.S. mothers do not feel their needs are being met, do not feel they have the support they need. And this is even more extreme for many people of color, mothers of color. How can Baby Center, tell us a little bit more. You know, I alluded to some of the programs, but like where should people hone in on to know that besides the community where we can fill the gaps through the Baby Center services programs?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think One thing is you alluded to this. There's a lot of great health information on the Baby Center app and on our website. So one of the ways that people don't feel supported is that I should say moms often don't feel supported in the postpartum period is they have symptoms that they don't know what to make of them. And it's completely understandable because especially if you're a first-time mom, you know, you would never have experienced postpartum symptoms before. How would you know what's normal and what's not? And I think the most important thing is to trust your gut and bring something up with a healthcare provider if you are uncertain about it. And if they feel like, if it feels like they're dismissive anyway, kind of like probe that, be like, oh, that's great. You don't think it's a concern. What makes you think that? But the other thing that Baby Center can offer that I think is really helpful is we do have a lot of information about different symptoms you might be experiencing or like what's normal, what's not, signs of postpartum anxiety or depression. And I think what happens when people can use that as like a baseline way to inform themselves is it does help you feel more confident entering into conversations with healthcare providers to, again, we keep coming back to this idea of like advocating for yourself and how the systems in an ideal world would be in place where we wouldn't have to be such fierce advocates for ourselves. But unfortunately, that's not our reality.
No.
So I think that's something that it's helpful for moms to know is Baby Center does have a lot of information about really almost any postpartum topic you could think of, because we have been covering this stage in people's lives for more than 20 years. You know, you can go down the rabbit hole of reading articles and, you know, everyone always says like, oh, don't Google your symptoms. That's like a fast way to provoke anxiety. It can be. I think the flip side of that is when you know the resource is reputable and, you know, on Baby Center, everything's medically reviewed. We're using experts as sources, so you don't have to worry about the unreliability factor. When you know it's reliable, it can also be helpful to arm yourself with information. So
yes, I think absolutely.
That's how we aim to be a resource.
And about how many users do you estimate that you have at this point?
It is in the millions. I would have to look up the exact
number. So the millions. I was just looking for a ballpark, right? I mean, if you have 700,000 posts a day, I was figuring there's got to be lots, and this is a huge community.
Yeah, I think, and it, you know, we have like our app audience and then there's the web audience. I mean, the web audience alone is over 10 million. And then there are people who engage with us primarily on social media. So yeah, we're touching like millions and millions of parents across all these different platforms.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Okay, I have to, as I was going through the website, I was checking out the blogs, and there was one that just, I'm excited. I had to talk to you about this. So this is moving from postpartum to parenting. And of course, this is all about, it relates to parenting, of course. And it was on millennial moms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the article, the blog talks about how you know, millennial moms are like turning things on end. You know, they often get the millennials in general get a bad rap of being like more self-absorbed and self-centered, but actually they're really savvy. A quote, underemployed, but entrepreneurial, educated, but in debt, digital natives, fluent with technology and new media. But back to the basics with strong focus on environment, health, and nutrition. Okay, so that's just to set it up. But here's the thing that I wanted to talk to you about, which is that the Pew Research Center report on millennials overall found that 52% saying being a good parent is, quote, one of the most important things in life, compared to, which is 24% higher than Gen X, so one generation away. Actually, not one generation. Is that two generations away?
Yeah,
I think I'm Gen X, and there's Gen Z. Is there Gen Z and then Gen X? I don't know. Okay, this is the comparison. So 24% yes. higher than Gen X. Mm-hmm. And then only 30% say the same about having a successful marriage, which is 14% lower than Gen X. So mm-hmm. the thing that struck me, and I'm not comparing generations.
Yeah.
That's not mm-hmm. what's important to me in this point. It is, wow, this is interesting. This is interesting because, and it makes sense in many ways, that as the generations have gone on, there is such a focus on parenting and being mm-hmm. a good parent and raising successful kids. And so, mm-hmm. and we've seen this trend for
yep.
a few decades now. And then of course we get the, you know, helicopter parents and all these different terms yeah. of like a little, like too much.
Yep.
I guess, so I get that. That's not surprising. But I guess what was surprising to me, maybe shouldn't have been, and also I wanted to raise a little bit of the alarm bells and talk to you about yeah. was people not thinking their relationship with their significant other, mm-hmm. and in most cases, the other parent of their child is as important, and yeah. how that trickles down to over-focus on children at the expense of relationship and all that goes on for the next 20 plus years until kids go away and then 50% yeah. divorce mm-hmm. rate of when they have an empty nest sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what you're a different generation than me. I'm 53. You are mm-hmm. a younger generation. So I just was curious. Both
yeah, I am a millennial parent. Yeah. So I'm in this yeah. demographic that we're talking about. I mean, starting with the pressure to be a good parent, and this is something we see all the time among like the parents in our audience. And you think about like, what did my school lunches look like? You know, that is one micro example of how this manifests, you know, and mm-hmm. it was like, you throw in like a bag of Lay's potato chips and like a Coca-Cola, a turkey sandwich. And like, that is your lunch. You know, that was the norm when I was going to elementary school in the 90s, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then today it's like every kid has this little bento box and they're like cucumbers yeah. cut into hearts in one compartment. And then there's like, you know, even if you have the same components, like sliced turkey, it's like, you know, rolled up into like turkey sushi for the kids.
yeah.
So there's, I think, you know, you could pick really like any aspect of parenting. I just picked lunches yes. because I feel like it illustrates this point of there's the expectations feel higher now for parenting than they, I'm sure my mom would like disagree with this in some ways if I were, yeah. or were talking right. to her, but there's just like a lot of pressure for every single aspect of parenting to feel really intentional and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that really manifest with gentle parenting too, is kind of yep. like the trend now mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, I want to make sure like as many interactions as possible that I have with my child are conducted in this really like thoughtful, emotionally regulated way.
Yes.
And I do think it's true that most millennials are not giving their, you know, partner, their relationship with their partner, the same amount of like bandwidth in their brain, thinking through like, well, what do I want that yes. to look like? What am I doing to nurture that relationship?
Yeah. And I get, yeah. and I totally get that and see that, where I am just wondering about and putting this out there for everyone mm-hmm. is, yeah, you can only do so much. So there's the idea mm-hmm. of what your perceptions are or your beliefs are, and then what your actions are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's one scenario where it's, raising my role as a parent is uber important, and my relationship mm-hmm. with my spouse is uber important. And mm-hmm. then when it comes down to it, more energy goes to the kids for all the reasons yeah. we've discussed than the parents, right? So that's mm-hmm. one thing. And I think that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And you have to really cultivate the relationship and, you know, have your date nights and mm-hmm. have your time to be alone. And, but what I think is interesting is this is belief. So even the belief is that it's not as important. So I just think that's an interesting trend that I think we all should be thinking about, because we know that our own personal health is critical as a parent for our kids to see us being healthy, having relationships, being engaged in our work, in our hobbies, in our friends, in our family.
Yeah.
That they're not a part of. That's really important as models. So that's one thing. But then also, how are we modeling what relationships are for them as they grow up and start to have relationships? And then also, how do we cultivate those relationships when our kids don't need us as much? Like, there's this awakening that happens at some point. You don't get the memo. My wife and I talk about this all the time. Like, no one ever told us the last time our kids were going to want to sleep with us, the last time that they were going to be read to, the last time that they wanted us to walk them in or pick them up. And sometimes it's just like goes from boom. It's so quick. And then you're left with yourself. And if you have a partner, you're left with your partner. So I don't know. I'm just throwing this all out there.
I mean, also, as you're saying this, like, this is what I try to remind myself of also when it's bedtime and my 3-year-old is like, "Mama, can you just stay one more minute?" But he does this like 20 times in a row, you know? Yes. And like, I know, the joke's on me because I like indulged him, know, those prior times. That's why he's asking again. But I try to really remind myself, like, this is fleeting. And like, one day you're going to look back, right? As much as right now I'm like, I need to leave this room. Like, I have dishes downstairs to do. It's like, try to cherish this because it won't last forever either. But I think the other thing I was thinking about when you were talking is we had done some other research on Baby Center that found it was, I think, 22% of moms say that they identify as just mom and they've lost touch with their identity outside of parenting. And this was like even more pronounced as parents had more children. So the numbers were higher for second-time moms, for third-time moms. I think there's a growing awareness is the good thing that, you know, it is important to maintain other aspects of your identity. And a big part of that is if you have a partner, you know, maintaining that relationship with them. But I feel like we haven't quite like caught up with like action, you know, meeting the like somewhat like starting to accept like, there's something here. I need to be more than just a mom. And to be fair to moms, I feel like it goes back to what we talked about in the postpartum where it's like from the second the baby's born, so many pieces of society are telling you like, you're a mom now, care about the baby, you know? So it's
Job. This is your identity. It is all consuming. That's all real. That's all.
It's hard to just like flip a switch, right? To like, I think as humans, we're just like not always very good at like nuance or balance. And to me, that's like ultimately what we're talking about here, right? Is like, there are different things in our lives we had to balance. It's, you know, the relationship we have with our kids and parenting, the relationship we have with our partner, the like hobbies and interests that we cultivate for ourselves. And it's really hard. I wish I had like a good answer to how you balance all these things in a really elegant way.
But. I'm not sure there is one. And I mean, I think you've expressed the components and the issues really well. I think it's about awareness of all this, which is why this is, I think, such an important conversation. I'm glad you brought this last piece in, because if we're aware that we need to focus on ourselves, so if we're aware that it's all consuming and really stressful on your body, on your mind, on your identity, and that's normal, that's helpful. Right? Just to even know that that's normal. And then if we are also aware that it's really common to lose oneself in motherhood and one's identity wrapped around that. So normal again, and really important, depending on your resources, your life situation, your geography, for you also to have your own life over time, like after the child is, you know, starting to survive on their own, and you have some supports, that it's really important for you to still have your own identity. Mm-hmm. Also, that it's very normal for couples to feel some levels of disconnect at times after pregnancy, in the early years, throughout. Like, it's normal. I mean, because the focus does become on the kids and job and economics. And so just that it's normal, but that we need to be aware of it if we're trying to be as whole as possible and we are trying to grow as humans throughout the life course.
Yeah. Yeah. When we were reporting on that research that found almost one in four moms identifies as like just mom and has sort of lost this sense of herself as a whole being, one of the tips from experts that I really liked was that it doesn't have to be like, you know, oh, I go buy a like membership at a gym and like have to carve out an hour a day to do this. Like, you can start small. Like, if you're driving the kids to daycare and they're asking you, like my sons do all the time, to play PJ Masks songs, like, you can say no. You can play the music you want to play, you know?
Right.
So I thought that was kind of a clever way to take something that can feel really daunting. I know, like, I feel overwhelmed sometimes when it's like, I feel so busy, and I know this is a common sentiment among moms and overwhelmed. And so this idea of like, but now you have to carve out time for yourself too, if you want to be doing it like quote unquote right. I thought that was a really like kind of clever and approachable idea of like, well, what are you already doing? And where are the ways you can, you know, like inject some of your own interests into what you're doing with your kids, or, you know, those moments that aren't going to take up extra time.
So helpful. So helpful. So it's micro and it's digestible and it's actionable. Like, actually, we're going to do mommy music today, mommy music on the way. And, you know, and the kids, the kids start like, you know, they follow our lead.
Yeah.
They start to be like, oh, can we listen to mommy music today? You know, like, it just starts, you create your own rituals.
Yeah, my five-year-old will tell you that Taylor Swift is a lyrical genius, and that may or may not be something I've said to him before.
Wow, how evolved is your five-year-old? Okay, last question before the parent footprint moment question. What aspects of your job fill you up and give you the most purpose?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think what I haven't talked about yet, but that maybe has come through in some of what we've talked about, is I also have always found myself drawn to what in the industry we would call service journalism. And it's just this idea of like creating content that's meant to provide a service for people, right? Like, help give them really actionable information or advice. To, you know, often for me, it's really manifested in like health topics and providing that. And it's just like really amazing to me to see content I create resonate with people. With social media now more than ever, you get that like feedback loop of people saying, you know, like, oh, like, this was so helpful. Thank you so much. And goodness knows the feedback is not always positive. There's plenty of negative feedback too. Everyone has an opinion on the internet, but it is those moments where you feel like, you know, even if you only helped one person, two people, to those people to have made a difference is really what keeps me feeling fulfilled in this field.
Awesome. Awesome. I sense that.
Great.
Okay. Parent footprint moment question. Here we go. You got this. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and or those you love.
So I was going to tell the story about my friend who I started like texting with postpartum, who helped me get over my, you know, imposter syndrome, I guess, of mm-hmm. being a mom. Should I tell a different story?
You tell anything that resonates with you.
Okay. I'll tell that story again, and maybe like the framing will be slightly different mm-hmm. so you can decide
yeah.
what makes the most sense for you. But yeah, when my oldest son was born, I felt, and I think there's not enough discussion around this, I just didn't feel immediately bonded with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were a few reasons for that. He went to the NICU for about 4 days after he was born. So, you know, there was like a physical separation, right? The birth had some traumatic moments, although he's perfectly healthy, nothing like that serious ultimately. But also, we see this reported a lot among baby center moms that they just like don't feel immediately bonded with their mm-hmm. baby. And it made me feel really guilty, to be honest, because it feels like this image you have in your head of becoming a parent is the baby arrives and you're just like flooded with love and it's just magical. And that was not my experience. It was more like I was like going through the motions of what I thought a mom was supposed to do, but it felt like imposter syndrome almost, because mm-hmm. like the logical part of my brain knew this was my baby, but it was surreal. It didn't feel like possible that this actually was mm-hmm. a new family member for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing that really helped me overcome that, or one thing I should say, is that I had at the time one of my husband's best friend's wives had given birth 6 days before I did, also to her first child. And she reached out to me, texted me, we lived in different states, said, "Hey, Robin, you know, like, how's it going? Like, can you believe we're moms?" And we just started texting like almost nonstop, you know, about feeding issues, about recovery. I would ask her a ton of questions like, "Are you going through this same thing?" And she really like validated all the struggles that I was going through. I saw how she was experiencing such similar things that it made me feel like seen as a parent. And not only was she explicitly saying at certain times, like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe in the attempt to like successfully breastfeed, you will all in a row, you'll try to breastfeed your son and then you'll bottle feed him and then you'll pump all to like try to get this system to work." She's like, "You're such a good mom." So sometimes she would like say in explicit ways she thought I was mm-hmm. a good mom. But also there was a power to like seeing her and just like knowing intrinsically she was an amazing mom. But mm-hmm. she was also someone who was experiencing a lot of the doubts and struggles that I was.
Right.
That right. I feel like, you know, I just am so, so grateful that we connected. And that's why I always tell new parents, like, you know, reach out to other new parents who are in the same boat as you, even if you don't know them that well now. This is like a very magical connection to have with someone.
Yeah.
And it really just helped me see myself as a mom in a way that I couldn't before that.
Yeah, that's really powerful, because you're able to see yourself through her. Like, you're mm-hmm. like, "She's a great mom, but wait, she's having some of the same struggles that I am, and she's a great mom." Oh, right. Yeah. Like helping you put it together for yourself. And I'm really glad that you did bring up also the challenge of bonding, which again is often very normal, mm-hmm. but again, no one gets told that. And then moms feel there is something wrong with them. Right. So the information is so, so important. It changes. It can change everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your story, your moment, and all of your expertise in your field and with Baby Center. I know it's very easy for people to find you guys. So tell everyone how to get linked up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say the best experience is on our app. So you can find our app, download it. It's free. We also are on the web at babycenter.com, and you can follow us as well if you're on Instagram, TikTok, or X. We have presences on, and Facebook, I should say, on all of those platforms.
Awesome. Check it out, everybody. Check it out. A whole treasure trove of information for you and those you care about. Robin, thank you. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, this was great.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Pass this on to everyone you know who will benefit, and there are so many who will. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. You know what I'm going to ask you to do. Two things. Try to be the person you want your child to become. And ask yourself that guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.